Welcome to Go West Young Podcast, the show about America's public lands and the outdoors. I'm Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver. In just a moment, we will sit down with the entire CWP crew to talk about us. We just got back from a six-day, six-state road trip, traveling more than 2,600 miles in defense of our national monuments. We met a bunch of interesting and vocal advocates for public lands along the way, so I have asked everyone on the team to pick a couple of their favorite moments from the trip. But first, a very quick news update. David Bernhardt, who's been described by us and several members of Congress as a walking conflict of interest, is now on the job as the Deputy Interior Secretary. Bernhardt was confirmed by a narrow margin in the Senate, just 53 yes votes. If his name is new to you, we've got some pieces up on our blog that get into the many, many conflicts of interest he brings with him to Interior. Everything from his work for a company that's trying to pump water out of the Mojave Desert to multinational oil companies, the list goes on. We will be keeping a very close eye on David Bernhardt now that he's the deputy secretary. His boss, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, also took heat over phone calls he made to Alaska's senators, Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski. Sullivan promptly spilled the beans, telling reporters that Zinke threatened Alaska's economy and oil production if Murkowski and Sullivan didn't vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Now, we were not the only ones to note that this is basically a mob tactic. That's a nice state you got there, Senator. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. Zinke has issued some non-denials, not disputing any of the specifics that Sullivan told reporters, but claiming it just didn't all amount to a threat. Needless to say, Zinke's got the power structure backwards here, because Lisa Murkowski is the chairwoman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. So after that call, she promptly canceled a hearing on Interior appointments that need Senate confirmation. In other words, that's a nice department you've got there, Secretary. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. All right, let's get this party started. We are here in the conference room, which is why it sounds a little boomy. We have the entire Center for Western Priorities staff with us. Our executive director, Jen Rokola.
Hello there.
Our deputy director, Greg Zimmerman, on the line from the CWP West Slope headquarters in Ridgeway, Colorado. Our advocacy director, Jesse Prentice Dunn.
Good afternoon.
Lucy Livesay, our policy and communications manager.
Hi, folks.
Andre Miller, our media coordinator.
Hello.
And Sarah Rose Tannenbaum, our outreach associate. Did I get that right?
You did.
All right, we're going to do this in chronological order, going back to a preview event of sorts that we did back in June at the Western Governors Association meeting in Whitefish, Montana. Among the speakers there was the mayor of Whitefish, John Mulfeld. I talked to him right after the press conference, and I asked him what Montana's public lands, including Glacier National Park nearby, mean to the economy of Whitefish.
Well, it's literally the driver of our economy in most respects. Our marketing plan focuses on the geotourists that are tourists that essentially want to find unique communities that are real, have real families, real jobs, but they come for the outdoors, the recreational opportunities that are not only our town provides, but also the adjacent public lands, including Glacier National Park, state lands, and the 94% of our land base that's literally tied up in public lands here in the valley.
So it's tourism, but it's also then the outdoor recreation opportunities that bring other businesses that aren't necessarily direct outdoor recreation businesses, is what you're saying.
That's correct. I think more and more people thirst quality of life, a quality environment. And here in Whitefish, we've really tried to piggyback on the governor's Main Street Montana project, which is essentially the business plan for Montana. And it's locally home, it's locally grown. And in addition to the outdoor recreational opportunities, we provide our visitors and the people that live here an authentic, real town experience.
Jen, I thought it was interesting going to Whitefish. It's Ryan Zinke's hometown. Everyone knows the secretary there. And while folks we talked to were very respectful of the secretary, they also made it clear that they disagreed with him when it comes to this review of national monuments.
No, I think that's right, Aaron. I think what we found, the folks in Montana are more concerned about access to public lands, greater access, and promoting the protection of public lands because, as the mayor said, their economy is driven by tourists coming to enjoy Montana's public lands. So you know, they may be respectful of Ryan Zinke, but they definitely disagreed with him.
And I suppose on some level this worked. He was in town for WGA, and immediately after that, all of a sudden, Upper Missouri River Breaks National Monument is off the list. And he says, oh, it's safe after all. This Jesse, I guess you can weigh in, started a bit of a trend that we saw now where he's playing this reality show games with his list of monuments at risk.
Exactly. He seems to be handing out figurative roses to each national monument that he thinks is politically beneficial for him to take off the list.
All right, so that was last June. Let's fast forward to last Monday in Grand Junction. Greg, who did we talk to there?
Yeah, we heard from a great group of community leaders over here on the West Slope. We talked to the mayor of Fruitvale, Lori Buck, who is the mayor of a town that's thriving because of the outdoor recreation economy and the benefits that are provided by the Colorado National Monument and the public lands around the community. We heard from a tech entrepreneur named Josh Hudnall. Josh is an employer who understands that towns are competing for businesses and talented employees with other towns across the country. Public lands offer places like Grand Junction a competitive advantage. And then finally, we spoke with Sarah Schrader, who is an outdoor recreation thought leader across Colorado, and a business owner and someone who's worked tirelessly to put her community, Grand Junction, on the outdoor recreation map.
I am so grateful that my kids have direct access to wild spaces here that the Forest Service, the Park Service, and the BLM provide in Mesa County. By planting my family and my business here in the Grand Valley, the love of public lands has seeped its way into my children's lives, my employees' lives, and we get to enjoy and appreciate these public lands every day.
That was Sarah Schrader of Bonsai Design. I thought, Greg, it was interesting. Grand Junction was a bit of a town in transition. Our event there was at this brand new amphitheater along the Colorado River. But to get there, you went through kind of an older industrial part of town. I kind of get the feeling Grand Junction is starting to realize they have an untapped natural resource running through their city.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. You know, the park that we were at, we were overlooking the Colorado National Monument. We're really in the shadow of the monument. And you get the sense that everyone we talk to understands that monuments and protected lands are sacred for the community of Grand Junction. I mean, look, Grand Junction is a very conservative place, but folks there are getting it. They understand that they have this amazing resource and access to some of the most wild and beautiful country, certainly in Colorado and across the country. You have the Colorado National Monument and McGinnis Canyon National Conservation Area, and all sorts of other access points for the public lands. You know, it's the kind of place where you hike with your family on the weekend and you can go for a bike ride over your lunch break. You know, as Colorado continues to grow and the state continues to invest in outdoor recreation, it's communities like Grand Junction that really are going to benefit.
And once again, I mean, I guess our track record here isn't bad. A couple days after we held that event, Secretary Zinke came to Colorado and declared, lo and behold, he wasn't going to touch Canyons of the Ancients National Monument. So as absurd as it is that this process even exists, I guess we can at least point to a good track record so far. Anyone want to chime in just with a little bit about Canyons of the Ancients and why it is that that's so special?
Sure. So Canyons of the Ancients actually has the highest density of archaeological sites in the country. It's in southwest Colorado. It's been long threatened by oil and gas leasing and really is an important part of our cultural history and the cultural history of so many tribes in the southwest.
So the monument itself, on the way out of town, we drove just past Canyons of the Ancients on our way through southern Colorado, through Durango, over Red Mountain Pass. Lucy or Andre, you guys were in the RV at that point. Who was lucky enough to be driving over the pass there?
Well, I was the passenger. I forced Andre to drive the pass. It was remarkably beautiful, but frankly terrifying.
Well, you guys got a bit of a storm there on the way down. We were a couple hours behind. I think we missed most of the good rain.
We did. We got some rain, but fortunately, we also had a guardrail at that point. So the rain was nothing.
Nice. Andre, I'm going to make you pick up your mic and talk to us. Just driving the RV, what's the view like? You're heading down over Red Mountain Pass through the San Juans and into your home state of New Mexico. What's going through your head there during that drive?
You go through the big transition from the high mountains of the San Juans down through Durango and into the canyons around the Animayas River and then into New Mexico, where the scenery changes a lot, much drier, big high thunderheads, more open plains.
So that gets us into Albuquerque. And Lucy, you led that media event for us. We had a whole lot of friendly faces turn up, which was great to see. What was your big takeaway from the Albuquerque event?
You know, we had a great day in Albuquerque. New Mexico's rich history is obviously intrinsically tied to the lands there. And we heard from community leaders who were pointing to protected public lands as an important part of their culture and history. We heard from outfitters whose communities and livelihoods had been revitalized by these national monuments, and from Senator Tom Udall, state director, who promised that the senator would defend national monuments in Washington.
All right, and who are we hearing from here? This is Gabe?
Yes, I'd like y'all to hear a quote from Gabe Vasquez, who's the Southern New Mexico coordinator for the New Mexico Wildlife Federation and the National Monument, or the New Mexico coordinator for Latino Outdoors.
Excellent.
For me, the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument is not a place to visit once in a lifetime. It's my home. It's a place that holds a sacred history of our past as Hispanic people and as New Mexicans. It's in our monument's rugged desert peaks, in the Robledo, the Potrillo, the Las Uvas Mountains, that the Jornada Mogollon people lived, raised their families, hunted wild game, and inscribed their stories in petroglyphs in the caves and hillsides of the Chihuahuan Desert. It's where the Piro Manso Tiwa people also lived along the Rio Grande, hunting and gathering and practicing primitive agriculture to survive for many years. And it's on this land where the Spanish clashed in deadly battles with the Apache and the Manso people, and eventually where the native people revolted. Our native Spanish and Mexican heritage lives in the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument. Our monument tells a unique American story that you cannot find anywhere else. To think of rolling back protections against this place that protects such an important part of our history is, to me and to my community, frankly, insulting.
Gabe was definitely one of the most powerful speakers I think we heard from here. You had some good conversations with him as we were getting ready to have this press event.
We did. He has a great background. He also has a gem of a quote from Teddy Roosevelt that we'd love for you all to hear as well.
A famous conservationist once said, "To waste, to destroy our natural resources, to skin and exhaust the land instead of using it as to increase its usefulness, will result in undermining in the days of our children the very prosperity which we ought to, by right, to hand down to them amplified and developed." Those are the words of Teddy Roosevelt, our 26th president, the signer of the Antiquities Act, and one of Secretary Zinke's greatest influencers.
So let's be honest here, you can't have enough Teddy Roosevelt quotes when we're talking about our national monuments. We were in Albuquerque because it's halfway between two of the threatened monuments. You've got Oregon Mountains, Desert Peaks in the south, Rio Grande del Norte to the north. If you head back one episode in your feed, we talked to the CEO of the Las Cruces Green Chamber of Commerce all about Oregon Mountains, Desert Peaks, and how local businesses are capitalizing on the monument designation. Someone, Lucy Andre, Sarah Rose, tell me a little bit about Rio Grande del Norte and that area up there.
Well, the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument spans acres and acres around the Rio Grande River. It's this remarkable chasm. It shoots deep into the river, and then above the chasm rises the peaks of the volcanic peaks in that area. And it's been a remarkable gift to communities like Taos and Cuesta, where outfitters have started new businesses, communities that were once struggling are thriving and forging new futures.
Very cool.
I'll say it's a great place to catch a hot springs in the river.
Nice.
Many good sights.
All right. I think we have to say goodbye to Lucy, who unfortunately has to go return the RV in question right now. So we'll let Lucy duck out. So heading west out of New Mexico into Arizona, we were in Flagstaff on Wednesday with four monuments threatened in Arizona. Andre, who did we hear from there?
Well, the event was in front of the Flagstaff City Hall. Congressman Tom O'Halloran sent a statement. His deputy district director, Chip Davis, read it. And then from there, we heard from the Coconino County Supervisor, Lena Fowler. She's Navajo, and her district includes Vermilion Cliffs National Monument. Here's a little bit about how she talked about it.
It is very, I would say it's very unique area. It is used by all. I know as Native tribes that are living within the northern Arizona, it is a place where natural herbs are collected. That's where medicine is made. Art, any kind of art materials, or it may be seen as art, but some of those art for us is very sacred, and that's where it's made from. This is an area where ranchers, it's a favorite too. There are ranchers there running about 5,000 to 8,000 animal units right now. It's a favorite to hunters, to guides, to outfitters. So this is an area where it is used by all. It's managed by BLM. Scientific research are taking place there on the animals, the environment, reptiles, and vegetation in the area. It is the economic driver for our region. And that is the reason why Coconino County Board of Supervisors passed a resolution in support of the Vermilion Cliffs National Monument.
You know, Supervisor Fowler was one of my favorite speakers this entire trip because she, just in that 1 minute little clip there, encompassed so much of what's important about these landscape scale monuments. It's about the scientific research and conservation. It's about the ranching. It's about the spiritual and traditional tribal uses. It really is an all of the above situation at Vermilion Cliffs and also Grand Canyon Parashant. And I think that kind of ties into one of the things we talked about as we were walking around town in Flagstaff. It feels in some ways like the next Boulder. It's a university town. It's a gateway to so much recreation. So many folks that we talked to were aware that the outdoor economy, and not just recreation, but everything else that comes along with that, is key to the future of Northern Arizona.
Well, and I wasn't on that part of the trip, but you look at a lot of these communities, it's not just outdoor recreation businesses that are relocating to towns in the West, but it's companies that want to give their employees a work-life balance. They want access to public lands because it enhances the experience for their employees, and they're able to attract really, you know, top high-quality workers.
And Sarah Rose, you joined up in Flagstaff after you spent a couple days earlier in the week talking to friends of ours in southern Arizona as well. What did you learn down there?
So I got to learn all about the Sky Island ecosystem around Tucson and learning about the mountains that rise up out of the desert there and how they change with gradients of altitude and water and elevation. So that was really a pleasure. And when I was talking with Carolyn Campbell from the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection, I got to see one of the initial reports that her coalition had provided in support of what soon became the Ironwood National Monument.
And that's one of the four Arizona monuments that are threatened. You've got Ironwood Forest near Tucson, also Sonoran Desert, which is kind of between Tucson and Phoenix. So for as much attention as we get, you know, pay, and rightly so, to the monuments that are threatened in Utah, where you've got Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase, you have four monuments that are very much beloved and are very much at risk. They were highlighted in a letter from the Congressional Western Caucus asking Secretary Zinke to try to do the unthinkable and shrink or get rid of these. And we've seen some strong pushback, certainly from the Arizona Congressional delegation, a very powerful op-ed from Congressman Raul Grijalva in the paper last week. But I think if there's one undercovered story in this whole monument review process, it may be what's going on in Arizona right now. And I hope I'm not just saying that because it's my hometown, so I may take this especially personally. So Flagstaff was a nice break from the heat. And after that, it was down the mountains into the California desert with a stop at Whitewater Preserve, which is the gateway to Sandusno National Monument. Now, we certainly know mountains here in Colorado, but it's very different when you're there in the desert and you see that rise 11,000 feet going straight out of the desert. It is something else to see. Sarah Rose again, who did we hear from in California?
First, we heard from Danielle Segura, who's the director of the Mojave Desert Lands Trust, and she told us about how her community fought for over a decade to designate national monuments in the California desert, and also how her organization gathered over 12,000 comments in support of these monuments.
And then we've got some clips here. First up, Michael Madrigal. Who's he?
So Michael Madrigal is the president of the Native American Lands Conservancy, and he told us about his tribal connection to Santa Snow National Monument and to Mojave Trails National Monument, and how these landscapes are really important for the sharing of his culture's identity and heritage and sacred lands. And after telling us a little bit about some of the amazing physical and cultural artifacts on the landscapes, like ollas and petroglyphs, he said this.
But it's not just these visible artifacts that remain on the landscape. The landscape is still imbued with a power, a spiritual energy that all of us as Native Americans are very much aware of. And we all rely on that. It's incumbent for the continuation of our Native cultures, tribal communities, to be able to bring our youth out to these sacred places, which many of them are located on these new national monuments, in order to share our tribe's history, to share our tribe's culture and spirituality with the coming generations. So this can only happen if these lands are protected and preserved in the way that was intended by the Antiquities Act.
So that, I think, echoed a lot of what we also heard previously from Lena Fowler, the Navajo Coconino County Supervisor from Arizona, of the spiritual importance of these lands. We've also got Chris Clark here in California. What's his story?
So Chris Clark is the California Desert Program Manager for the National Parks Conservation Association, and I really enjoyed this clip from him talking about how fighting for one monument is fighting for all of them.
We see all monuments, all national parks, as relying on each other for support. There's an old labor union slogan, an injury to one is an injury to all. Anything that hurts Hanford Reach National Monument, Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, Bears Ears, Grand Canyon Escalante, all those rely on Mojave Trails and Sand to Snow, and Mojave Trails and Sand to Snow rely on all those monuments.
I think it's important to note that that is not just a saying, but in this case, when you're talking about something that is truly unprecedented, a president trying to shrink and eliminate monuments like this, that if for some reason Secretary Zinke and President Trump were to succeed in court, that sets up a terrifying precedent for any president going forward.
I think that's right, Aaron. I think, we're operating under the assumption that the Antiquities Act is a one-way street, that presidents have the ability to designate monuments, but a president doesn't have the ability to reverse a predecessor's decision on protection of these places.
So it was kind of mentioned in that sound from Chris Clark there are a bunch of California national monuments that are threatened by this review, not just Sand to Snow where we were, but up and down the state. So it's something we haven't spent a whole lot of time on this podcast, but it's definitely worth your time diving into.
You know, I just, if I may, I think one of the things, and I wasn't in California, of course, but you guys sent a picture on your way headed out of town from the Sand to Snow Monument Bar and Grill, which I think is just an incredible example of local folks establishing businesses around these monuments. I mean, these are places that are thriving because of these new national monuments. And it's hard to believe restaurants named after these new national monuments are going to have to, you know, somehow rename themselves if the president and interior secretary decide to undermine these protections. And frankly, that, you know, the same visitors and folks who are settling in these places may decide to go elsewhere if these monuments are ultimately undermined.
I think it's also a sign that you don't name your restaurant Sand to Snow Cafe unless you know that you're getting enough traffic coming in and out of the monument to justify, you know, that kind of name and focus for your business. So, I mean, clearly it's a driver. We heard that from New Mexico as well, where they're growing New Mexico wine and naming it after Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks. Again, because it's a driver, because folks come through town and they want to remember their stay in that way. So so many examples of how national monuments are helping these local economies thrive. Jesse, I want to hop up to Las Vegas because I know you've got a run as well here. That was a special stop for a couple reasons. First of all, we met up with the gang from EcoFlight there.
That's right. We were pleased to meet up with our pilot, Bruce, who flew all the way over from Colorado to take local reporters and advocates up in his very small plane, I might add, for a really nice trip over Gold Butte National Monument.
And that's really close to Las Vegas, just a quick little hop over Lake Mead.
Absolutely.
And what did you hear from folks when they came back down? What was the view like up there?
Well, I think the view was stunning. You know, obviously getting to see a wide range of the Nevada desert there. They've got a really interesting geologic feature called the Devil's Sinkhole or Devil's Throat, which sinks over 100 feet down into the ground. And so I think these folks were really struck at the scale and the landscape and, you know, something that folks say you can only see from above.
So we get into the press event there, and this is again, special, and it felt like we were very much gaining speed at this point because all of a sudden we had not one but two members of Congress joining us.
That's right. We were really lucky to have both Congresswoman Dina Titus, whose home is in Las Vegas but has been a longtime champion for national monuments within the state, and then also Congressman Reuben Kiewen, who represents Gold Butte in his district and has been a really forceful advocate in his time in Congress.
And of the other folks who joined us at that press conference there, I think one of the most, I guess, surprising titles to me when I saw the list was architect.
That's right. We were lucky to be joined by Eric Roberts, who's an award-winning architect. He's a principal at a local firm called SH Architecture. And he had a really interesting perspective into how these monuments and public lands impact his business.
We've slowly grown back, but as we've tried to recruit the talent of a lost generation of architects, it's become evident that young people and the workers of tomorrow desire a place where they can recreate. They desire a place that offers to them natural beauty, time away from the office, in some place that gives them the ability to aspire, to dream. Our national monuments are just that place. For our business to be successful and to move forward into the 21st century and to be vibrant again, we require these national monuments, these wild places, which link us back to Mother Earth and tell us of what we have been and what we can be tomorrow. My business depends on these precious places that are so delicate in the desert. And I call upon all Nevadans to stand up, to claim these lands, and to say to Washington, get your hands off my national treasures. And I say to Secretary Zinke, get your hands out of my business.
All right. He feels strongly about that.
That's a word for it.
We also got a clip here from Congressman Kiewen. What was his message?
So I think he had a really simple and compelling message that folks in his district, people around Nevada, really treasure their public lands, and that Gold Butte in particular is a place where so much public input went into designating it. And I think he's really worried about Secretary Zinke visiting in the coming weeks and really shutting out a lot of that public input in an effort to eliminate or shrink that monument.
You know, a lot of people think of Las Vegas. A lot of people think of Reno, and they think that that's all Nevada, that only those two cities make up our entire state. But we all know that between Reno and Las Vegas, there's so many beautiful lands, so many mountains, and in between those lands, we have Gold Butte and Basin and Range. And those are some of the most beautiful areas, not only in Nevada, but across the country and across the world. So we want to send a message to Secretary Zinke that as you visit Nevada, that you take the time to listen to Nevadans, that over 70% of Nevadans support protecting these sites as our national monuments, that 2.3 million Americans across the country went online and made comments in support of protecting our lands. You got to listen to the American people.
All right. After Nevada, it was on to the big finale in Salt Lake City. This was not an accident that we were winding up in Utah at the end there. Jen, who did you meet with there?
So, Aaron, we met with, we had a great group of speakers who joined us to talk about their support for public lands and national monuments. We had State Representative Angela Romero, Utah State Representative Angela Romero, Braden Weeks, who is representing Utah Dine Bekea, Janine Donald, who was the executive director of Elements Traverse, and Michaela O'Leary, who was the assistant store manager of the Patagonia store in Salt Lake City. They all talked about the importance of national monuments to Utah, and we're going to hear first from Braden Weeks talking about the importance of Bears Ears National Monument to the cultural history of the Native American tribes in Utah.
So I wanted to speak about or speak to why this is so important, why public lands and these national monuments are so important to Native people. And as I was thinking about that, UDB brought a bunch of youth down to Bears Ears National Monument this spring. And we took them out with elders and we let them explore. We let them see this for themselves. And it was surprising how much cultural knowledge the youth held within themselves, and they could implant on this landscape, and they could share with us, and they could share with each other. And you could see that the land activated that in them. It made them excited to be part of this. It made them excited to be part of their culture. And that is why it's so important to us Native people that these lands be preserved, that this history be preserved, that our sacred spaces, that our history is protected within this national monument, the Bears Ears National Monument.
So the reason we are in Utah and wrapping up the tour there is the Outdoor Retailer Show, which had its home in Salt Lake City for decades, and this week is the very final one in Utah. The show's packing up and leaving town, heading to Denver for the foreseeable future because of Utah's anti-public lands position. I think it's safe to say that wouldn't be happening right now if it wasn't for Patagonia's leadership.
That's right. Patagonia has been a national leader in standing up for the protection of public lands and these national monuments. And they called on Utah's elected officials and Utah's governor not to go down this path where they are calling on this administration to undo the decision by President Obama to protect Bears Ears as a national monument. And instead of embracing Bears Ears as a national monument, the Utah delegation, the governor, a number of local elected officials have decided to, encourage the administration and Secretary Zinke to undo that protection of Bears Ears. And so Patagonia has been one of the leading companies calling on this administration and encouraging people to protect Bears Ears and being vocal about their how important public lands are to Patagonia, both as a company, but also as individuals who work in that store. And so we're going to hear from Michaela O'Leary, who was our final speaker on the Monuments to America road tour.
This monument review has been deeply unpopular. In the monument comment period, there has been huge support shown for protection of these places. 2.7 million people commented during this comment period. It's an unprecedented number. Usually people don't come out in droves like that. 98% of them were in favor of growing protections or protecting existing conditions for these monuments. So we as Patagonia plan to stick our feet in the ground and continue to support this push for public lands as a business, as members of the Utah community, and of the greater sort of outdoor industry as a whole.
So a whole lot of leadership there from Patagonia at Outdoor Retailer this week. We've seen Secretary Zinke make his visit to Utah already, and he made it clear he thinks Bears Ears should be shrunk in some public comments, but we will see what comes out of that. Andre, I want to ask you, this was your first big series of events with CWP since you joined the team. What did you take away from your week on the road?
Well, the tour went to a few places that I hadn't been. It covered a lot of the Southwest, and of course a lot of these national monuments that are under review are in the Southwest. And I think it went to show how different a lot of these places are, how different a lot of these communities are, how different a lot of the monuments are, but that they all these monuments are around this idea of land protection, land conservation, and that the one of the best ways that our country has had to protect these places is through the Antiquities Act and protecting them as national monuments. And I think everyone that we talked to realized that and saw the importance of the act and are not interested in changing that history.
Sarah Rose, what was the thing that surprised you most during the trip?
Probably the casual conversations that happened after the formal press conferences. It was really a delight to see all these conservation leaders, local leaders, have discussions about their place and why it's important to them. And I don't know what came of it specifically, but I could just see sort of the capacity building and the storytelling and the love and affection that people have for these places.
Greg, what's next? What happens next? What do you think we see happen over the next month before Secretary Zinke's recommendation is due?
Well, unfortunately, we're in a little bit of a wait and see. We are watching the secretary sort of slowly trickle out his decisions. As Jesse alluded to earlier, giving roses to the monuments that he prefers for political reasons. I think we need to keep the pressure up. We need to make sure that Secretary Zinke, the Interior Department, the President understand that every single one of these national monuments is sacred, and that an attack on one national monument is an attack on all. So we can't let them get away with releasing a handful of monuments and in the end undermining a century's worth of American conservation legacy. And so we're just, I think at CWP, we're going to keep up the good fight. And I think that the road trip that we all just participated in really demonstrated that national monuments and conservation at a time when our country's so divided is still something that unifies the nation. It's been that way for a century, ever since Teddy Roosevelt protected the first public lands. And it remains that way. And we just need to make sure that this administration understands that.
Jen, we had this public comment period. We saw 2.7 million comments come in to regulations.gov and submitted by conservation and business groups. That's over, but is it too late for folks to have an impact? You spent, more than a decade working in congressional offices. Do phone calls into Congress still work, and is there a chance to influence this process?
Absolutely. I would say that anybody who is passionate about public lands, concerned about this review, should absolutely contact their member of Congress, their U.S. senator, their local leaders. I mean, their voices have sway, is my hope. You've seen Secretary Zinke take some of these monuments off the table. We want him to take all of these monuments off the table and keep the protections and strengthen their protections. And I think people should absolutely contact their members of Congress. And I would continue to contact this administration and make sure that they know that you support public lands. I think what we've seen through this review, 2.7 million comments, 98% of those people commenting support public lands. I think this administration is awoken a sleeping giant, that people love their public lands, and that's the message that people have delivered. And let's hope that they're listening to the American people and not some narrow, special interest.
I think we're going to leave it there. I want to start end with some acknowledgments. First of all, Jesse just had to run as well, but I want to acknowledge the countless hours that Jesse put into organizing this tour. This was his baby start to finish, and it was amazing what he managed to pull off. I also want to say thanks to everyone who helped us out along the way. It is a very long list, but especially the extended CWP team, Caitlin in Montana, Curtis in Colorado and New Mexico and Utah, Jacob and Leo in California and Nevada. This was a very big undertaking for a small team. We couldn't have done it with everyone else who has helped us along the way. I also want to mention some very special thanks to the Green Chili Cheeseburger at Monroe's in Albuquerque, the Almendrado Sour Cocktail at Criollo and Flagstaff, and the saltwater pool at Coracoya Pensione in Palm Springs. Really, they made this whole trip absolutely worth it. Of course, the monuments as well. Any other favorites? Anyone else in the room that you want to give a special shout out to before we go? All right. I'm going to take that as a no. No trips back in Western history this week. Don't worry. We will be back to our regular podcast format in a week or two. Thanks also to all of the podcast listeners who we met along the way. It was great for all of you to come say hi. Of course, we love email podcast@westernpriorities.org. On behalf of Jen, Greg, Jesse, Lucy, Andre, and Sarah Rose, I'm Aaron Weiss. This has been Go West Young Podcast.